Welcome to the WP Builds Podcast, bringing you the latest news, interviews, and fun for the WordPress community. Now, welcome your host, Nathan Wrigley.
Hello there, and welcome once again to the WP Builds Podcast. You've reached episode number 421, entitled At the Core, with Birgit Pauliak and Fabian Kagi, episode 3. It was published on Thursday the 8th of May, 2025. My name's Nathan Wrigley, and before we join Birgit and Fabian, a few bits of housekeeping. The first thing to mention is that the Page Builder Summit version 8 is back. It is starting next week, so it's beginning on Monday the 12th of May. If you're interested, head over to pagebuildersummit.com. You will see that there are over 35 speakers. They are raring to go to impart their knowledge and help you with your website building business, whether you're a freelancer, marketer, SEO, page builder user, whatever it might be. They're there to help. They're going to be bringing a load of bonuses. And don't forget that you can purchase the Power Pack to make the experience a whole lot better and keep all of the content for the rest of your life. PageBuilderSummit.com. If you're interested in sponsoring that event, there are still a few of the micro and patron sponsors available. Head to PageBuilderSummit.com/sponsors to find out more. We truly would love to see you at that event. It always is a whole lot of fun, and it may very well connect you with an entirely different community in the WordPress space, which is never a bad thing. The other thing to mention is that if you enjoy this podcast, WP Builds, and you would like to align yourself with it, maybe get your product or service out in front of a WordPress-specific audience, because that is what we have, head to wpbuilds.com/advertise to find out more. And guess what? These three companies did exactly that. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the Hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. You can find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. Keeping the lights on is Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud, managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. We're also supported this week by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for their support of the WP Builds podcast. Podcasts like this cannot happen without the support of fine companies like that. Okay, what have we got for you today? Well, it is the third in a series of podcasts that I've been doing with Birgit Pauliak. I've also been joined in this series by Anne McCarthy. And today we're welcoming Fabian Kagi. And it's a conversation called At the Core. And the idea is that about once every 3 months, we join up and have a chat about what has happened in WordPress Core during that time. A lot has been happening. And so we get into all of that. So we talk about the Source of Truth document, which Birgit has put together over on the Gutenberg Times. But then we also talk about the cadence of WordPress and the fact that it's shifting over to a one major release cycle per year. How does this impact and what benefits can we spy in the future because of that? We also get into a new AI product by 10up and a theme switcher plugin as well. It's all coming up next, and I hope that you enjoy it. I am joined on the podcast by two fabulous guests. I've got Birgit Pauliak and Fabian Kagi. Hello, both.
Hello.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me.
Good to be here.
You're very, very welcome. I'm really pleased to have you both back. This is a show which we've been doing for several episodes now. It's called The Core, and I think you can probably work out what we're talking about. We're talking about the core of WordPress. And the intention really is to run this show about once every 3 months, so every quarter. Gives us a little bit of time for things to change, things to happen. And actually, quite a lot has changed in the last 3 months, more so about the nature of the project rather than the specific bits and pieces in the project. But that's what we're here to talk about. And in order to know that the people that I'm talking with have some authority in this space, let's have a little bit of an introduction from you both. I'll go to Birgit first, just your little potted bio. Tell us who you are.
All right, my little potted bio. That's a very British expression. So my name is Birgit Pauli Haag. I'm the curator at the Gutenberg Times and host for the Gutenberg Changelog. I work for Automattic and I'm a developer advocate for WordPress and other things. And I live in Munich and married for many decades.
Nice. Thank you so much. And Fabian, over to you.
Yeah, I'm Fabian Kegi. I'm the director of editorial engineering over at the WordPress-focused agency 10up. And I'm a WordPress core committer. Officially kind of got that title back in December. Very happy about it. And I live over in Germany, have been part of the WordPress community for quite some time and excited to be on the show for the first time.
Yeah, thank you so much. And it makes me realize immediately I said Fabian and it's Fabian. So I apologize for that.
The funny thing is when I'm in my English brain, it's Fabian also. It is just the natural thing to say.
Yeah, well, if I switch between the two, forgive me. But there you go. Now you know these two people have got real chops, real interest in the project, consuming it, living it, breathing it over the last 3 months. Now, what we've done is, as always, we've created a sort of Google Doc and we have blocked the subject into various bits and pieces. Time permitting, we'll get through all of it. We might not, but we'll endeavor to do the best that we can. Always, every single thing that we mention will be linked in the show notes. So if you head to wpbuilds.com and search for At The Core and you'll find the latest episode. And you'll see the show notes there. So, you know, don't try to figure out what the links are. Obviously, you could Google it. That'll work. But we'll have all of the show notes listed. And so the first piece that we're going to be talking about today is, Gutenberg Times. Birgit is bringing us something that's produced on something that she produces. And it's the Source of Truth WordPress 6.8 document. And I'll just summarize what this is. This is an endeavor to essentially put in one place all of the different bits and pieces that have happened, lots of links, lots of description, the entire gamut of 6.8 basically on one page. But because of that, there's probably too much for us to describe or discuss. And so we're going to limit it to six things. And let's start off then with the fact that 6.8 has got some details enhancements, as you've said in our show notes. Birgit, Fabian, over to you. Whatever you want to say about that.
I put the things I want to talk about from the content creator's point of view. And so the detail enhancements are not the details of the enhancements. There is a details block in...
I should have said that. I apologize. Yeah.
I like that kind of... Yeah. Details block is you have a summary and then it opens up to the details of that. It's pretty much kind of what an accordion...
Yeah, it's like a single accordion, yes. Isn't it? It's just one little accordion.
Yes, and yeah, that is why this enhancement is really good, because now you can group single blocks to an accordion, kind of an FAQ page, and the browser automatically will close one when you open the next one from that group. And there's a name attribute in the sidebar, a little bit further down on the sidebar, where you can give each detail block, the same name, like FAQ or what you ever wanted to know about things. And then it grouped the browser group some with the behavior. So that is really good.
Yeah, it's a nice little feature, isn't it? I use the details block in order to... I don't know if this is the right use of it, but I use it to show and hide transcripts, yes, for podcast episodes, you know, because I think it's fair to say that the majority of people probably are listening to it. But obviously there are people who would like to consume that content. So it just says transcript. You click on the little arrow, up it opens. And but now I could block that transcript into various different sections, like, I don't know, intro, main content, outro, something along those lines, however you want to do it. So little groups within inside of the main block.
Okay. Exactly.
That's really neat.
What even helps you is that the details block summary, so that's the top line, will show up in the list view now, so you can orient you where you are on the whole page. That's another great enhancement there. So,
one of the nice things about it is that was one thing that we wanted to ship from the very beginning of when that block was even introduced. There was a lot of debate back when that got merged into Gutenberg, because there is still that conflict. Is this actually for accordions, or is it just for the use case that you just mentioned for transcripts and those kinds of actual details things because of the semantics? And originally, when that details block was shipped, the browser didn't have a native way of supporting all of that, so you had to build your custom JavaScript implementations for grouping them. And it just wasn't a clean thing that we felt comfortable shipping in core. And then there was a new browser standard that actually is that name attribute that just gets added to that HTML details element, which at the time when we merged it was at 20% global availability across browsers. And now, earlier this year, it finally kind of has reached that 90%+ threshold. So we actually now have sufficient browser support across all of the big browsers everywhere that this feature is now fully built on top of just web standards and is using that, which is very nice.
That's kind of an interesting thing, isn't it? Because we don't often talk about the dance between a CMS WordPress and what the browsers will allow. Because, you know, many developers, you can imagine, third-party block suites, that they may implement their own JavaScript version of that and figure out how to chunk things into different sections, if you like, with a bit of JavaScript. But waiting for the standards-based approach is obviously, there's all the time in the world now for that to be implemented, and you don't have to unpick things and have the backwards compatibility problem. And working on open web standards, W3C, bits and pieces. Yeah, that's great. Anything to add to that, or should we crack on? I think that means crack on. Okay, style book. I've got to confess, the style book is something that I don't often open. It's the kind of thing that I open because I'm curious about WordPress. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have a great deal of insight into it. But style book now being more integrated with global styles. Again, over to you.
Well, the style book was hidden, and it's still kind of hidden. But when you the global styles moved from, they didn't move, they're on both sides now, but the global styles used to be on the right-hand side, and they are now on the left-hand side, just next to the dark navigation bar, so you can make changes to blocks and style variations and all that. But you have never, and the style book actually gives you a easy way to look at how the changes affect all the blocks in your site and how they look. So if you change typography for the text, you see how it changes for the heading, for the paragraph, for the quote, for the, all those blocks where text is available. And it's a very easy way to do quality assurance on your styling, and also how it propagates around all those blocks that are on patterns that are on your site. And you can easily...
I remember back in the day always creating a page for my clients where I would try to implement all of the different bits and pieces that a client could possibly see. So here's what a P tag will look like. Here's the H1 through the H6. Here's a button. Here's another button. And now all of that is just done for you. You could just ship it to the client, say, look, go here, click that. And that's what everything will look like. Does it bring in the third-party blocks? Let's say I've got a block suite. Yeah.
It does.
I didn't realize that. I thought it might have just been core blocks. Thank you. Fabian, anything to add to that?
Yeah. For the stylebook itself, I still love that project. I still think it's so great because of that reason. It still is something that I'm paying a lot of attention to and still trying to make it even better and make it even more useful to the type of client work, because right now we often still have to resort to building those kitchen sink pages because we want to showcase all the patterns and so many more variations of Flux and all these things, which especially now, kind of, I have to confess, that is one thing that I'm not 100% sure. Maybe Birgit, you can help me. Did it actually land in 6.8 that it is now available for classic themes as well? Or
yes.
Was that...
Yes.
Okay, then that is the thing where in a classic theme that is using theme.json, but not a fully block-based theme that leverages all of the block-based templates, you now also get to use that that style book, but in a read-only mode. And that is much right. closer to the thing that we, for the highly customized client sites, want to actually have. Because most of the time, yes, we're using the site editor and we're using global styles as a development tool to kind of build the design system, do all those things. But then we want to leverage the style book as a kind of QA tool and for the client to see what's available, but not fully exposing it to be all editable, all just customizable, but rather just having that one place where you can see all the things. And that is where it is now super powerful that that's also available to classic themes. Though,
yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry, you carry on. I apologize.
I was just also going to say it kind of is funny that in the time between, I think I was also very active about the fact that, hey, I want this style book to be available for classic themes, because most of the work that I was doing a year and a half ago were classic and hybrid themes. And now 100% of the work I'm doing is block-based themes. So it's kind of, I no longer am using it in a classic theme context, but it's funny how those things work out.
Yeah, it'll certainly be useful for those people who are still using a classic theme. And it's kind of the thing that I think most people won't have visited the style book. Certainly not the kind of place that they're returning to that often. But if you are shipping client websites, definitely figure out where it is, because it's going to save you a lot of time. And it's just such an interest. It's actually just quite interesting scrolling through and thinking, oh, I missed that one. Okay, really? The P is going to look like that? Okay. So brilliant. Nice updates. And it's all now moved over to the left and it will integrate nicely with the global styles. Okay, so number three on our list from the Source of Truth document is called Browser Through Section Styles in Zoom Out View of Patterns. That's quite a lot to say.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So parse this for us, Birgit.
So the section styles came in with 6.6 and WordPress 6.6, and the zoom out view came in with 6.7. And now this is a combination that when you zoom out and you add a pattern, that you also get a little button in the toolbar where you can change through the color settings. Yeah, the style variations for that particular pattern and how it changes. So WordPress 2025 has a few style variations for the group, and they have different colors, so different background, different foreground, different fonts. And it livens up the page when you can change the color just for that particular section. And that is kind of nice to go through and very easily just see how the page changes when you go just hit the button multiple times and browse through those section styles.
I think the context that you get from the zoom out view is something I didn't really anticipate when it first shipped. I just thought, okay, that's a curious thing. Okay, there it is. But then the more that it presents, and actually in most cases for me, it presents itself automatically. I drop a pattern in and there it is. I'm just looking at it right away and I have to dismiss it. But it immediately tells me, okay, that's what the whole thing will look like. And then being able to say, okay, that bit in the middle, let's just click the button and we'll just add a bit, I don't know, we'll just change the feel of it. We'll go from dark to light to back to dark within the patterns. And you can just get a feel of what the whole document will look like. And it seems like a nothing, but it's actually a really, really powerful thing. And especially for the designers out there, it just gives you an intuition of, oh, yeah, that's what I want. Or, oh, no, that's really not what we wanted. And it all just happens seamlessly. So, Fabian,
yeah,
over to you.
I think it's a perfect example of the gradual improvement of those features that we're seeing in WordPress right now, where in 6.6, the section styles were added. And then in 6.7, it was changed so that in the zoom out mode or in those various rendering modes, when a block is rendered in that content only presentation where you kind of, you don't see all of the wrappers, all of that complex structure, but you just see the content pieces, that you would still be able to change the different section styles that are available for that group. And that was not as discoverable through the block toolbar. It was only, it showed in the right-hand inspector area where it could switch between those. And that was already a massive improvement because you are now able to leverage that very powerful feature of those section styles, even when things are in that more user-friendly content-only locked mode. And now the next step of that, actually exposing that to easily cycle through those variations, is just, it's a nice flow of how that feature is progressing.
I totally agree. And it feels, for me at least anyway, the future of WordPress is patterns.
Absolutely.
I want to be in a world where I've pre-configured a bunch of patterns and I, you know, go to start something fresh and just click, 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 drop in the patterns. And in some cases, they can be quite big. You know, it could be almost like a whole landing page worth of a pattern. So it's not just like a little row or something. And having the context of, okay, what does that look like abutted against that one? Okay, that doesn't work. Let's move those around and what have you. It's just a really neat little feature. So if you haven't seen those, go and check it out. And now we've got the option to interfere with the colors of those out of the box.
Not only the colors, you also can change the design. So if you drag and drop a pattern in that has a category like call to action or a services kind of thing, there's also a button that says change design, and then you get a different pattern from the same category. So that's also came with 6.7. It's not so immediately visible, but because you still have to make the choices before you put it into the page. But it's also streamlines the what you said, yeah, the page creation process quite a bit. Yeah, you can just drag and drop all the patterns in there and then be done with it, and then make all the changes, like the header changes, the copy changes, the images you switch out, then for the next step. Yeah.
These kind of things are really democratizing, not just the creation of content on the web, but the creation of design on the web. You know, it really does empower people who, like me, basically, I always liken myself to a potato in terms of my capability to design nice things. I do not have it. But thankfully, other people do, and they create nice looking patterns for me. And so in a heartbeat, click, oh, that's basically what I want. And it's just wonderful, you know, just absolutely wonderful that this stuff is freely available to us. Right, I will move on then. So section 4 of Birgit's Source of Truth document, or the Source of Truth document, gallery block enable expand to click for all images in one click. Again, over
well,
to you.
That takes care of something that has been really bothering me for a while, is you can, for each image block, you can set the setting, expand on click on the front end. So it kind of, you have a thumbnail and it kind of get bigger. If you put that image in the gallery up until 6.8, you had to make that choice for every single image that in your gallery. If you have 5, that's possible. If you have 10, you are annoyed by number 7.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. Now yeah. There is a gallery setting that kind of with one click puts it to all images that are in the gallery. So
essentially, you load up the gallery images, tell the parent, okay, make them all clickable, and they'll display in this way. And so rather than having to, you know, and you can imagine if you've got like 15 or 20, you really are, you're on a quarter of an hour there, just, and you're guaranteed to miss one.
Oh, yeah.
It's guaranteed to miss one. And it'll be the one that your client finds. And now it's just basically one checkbox. You go in and check the one thing and you're done. Yeah, that's nice.
I haven't actually played with this one yet. Does it also mean that if I enable that toggle on the gallery, you can cycle through the various images in Lightbox, or is it only one by one still?
It's still only one by one, but I know that some of the plugins, like Jetpack or so, add that missing piece, where you can then cycle through.
Okay. Yeah. They layer that on top of the core version. Okay, that's interesting. I do wonder sometimes about the accessibility of those things. Obviously, if you're just doing one at a time, there's less to worry about. But with the, you know, finding focus on the arrow or you know, whatever it may be, it's kind of an interesting...
Yeah, and that is the discussion on amongst the contributors, how to best achieve that gallery kind of sliding back and forth in points of accessibility, and opinions are strong, so it didn't move further for now. Yeah,
I mean, it does have a lot of utility, doesn't it? If for example, if you're on your phone and you've got that finger into, you know, where you can just sort of sweep left, left, right, right, then that's always really intuitive. But if you've got to close one, open one, scroll a bit, open one, next one, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I can see that would be really nice, but we've got to get that right. Okay, here's the favorite. The query loop block enhancements. Page order sort, query total block. What a great thing the query loop block is. It brought WordPress basically really democratized. Suddenly, rather than just creating content, paragraphs, text, click publish, suddenly makes it that inexperienced users can do really complicated things, you know, display loops of different things on their WordPress website without having to know code. But what have we got here then? We've got page order sort and query total block. I'm familiar with the first one, but not with the second. So describe them both.
Well, you could do a query block and go through all the pages. And you can also identify a parent and say, okay, bring me all the child pages for that, if you put them in a hierarchical form. But what you couldn't do was sort the subpages or any pages that are in the loop with a sort order that you already put in there. And that is now available in two forms. You can do it ascending or descending. So you go from 0 to 8 or from 8 to 0. But it's the thumbnails are sorted, or the list of pages is sorted. The second one is the query total block, is a new block, and that gives you the information that with that page load on the query, we have 12 results found, for instance.
Okay.
And then showing in the pagination 1 through 10 of 12 results. That's kind of that information that was missing from the query block, but it was pretty much in a lot of classic theme templates in there. So now that is also coming to the block editor.
Do you know, Birgit, do we have to know that block exists, or is there some UX or UR UX that will put that in when we insert the query loop block?
There is no automation. It's only available when you're in the query loop block. When you click on the plus sign, then it shows up in the list.
Got it.
Yeah, but other than that, you need to know want that.
Fabian, anything on that one before we get to your one?
I was just going to say, for the sort order, that is something that if you've ever worked on a client site and had to deal with a team page where leadership needs to come first and this person needs to be before that other person, that is the typical example. And I think even to this day, one of the oldest plugins that was still hand-coded by the founder of TedUp, that simple page reordering plugin, is kind of, we have that menu order thing where you can input the number, but now being able to use that simple page reordering plugin to just reorder the pages visually in the list, kind of in the admin table, and then being able to tie it to your query loop to use it there is just so cool.
Okie doke. And the last bit that we've got in terms of the source of truth document is viewing the template as you edit content. And then you've added persistent in brackets. I'm going to hand this one to Fabian because he was the one that added this in.
Yes, that has been my pet feature that I've just, for me, that feature made block-based themes so much more powerful than traditional and classic themes. The actual options to view the template as you edit content actually isn't a new thing. It has been, I think, since WordPress 6.5 or even earlier, but it was something that was very undiscoverable. Previously, it was only kind of in the document sidebar where you were able to switch between different templates. There was one option between that change template or create a new template that was view template, which allowed you to toggle that. And in a block-based theme, when your entire template is made out of blocks, that shows you all of those template pieces in the editor as you're editing your content. So imagine you have a single post that has the title at the very top, then the featured image, then some tags, some author information, and then the actual content. And without that option, you just see your title and the content. And when you check that option, you now see title, the featured image, the tags, everything as you're actually editing the content. And
do you... You carry on, sorry.
Sorry. Those in that mode, all of the template blocks by default are disabled. You can't actually select them. But there is a special way that we can mark specific blocks as content blocks. So for example, the featured image, if it is placed in the template, that block still is editable. You cannot delete the block, you cannot move it, but you can set the featured image right in line, right then and there. And that is something that it has been around for a little bit, but it now, first of all, if you check that option, it persists to your user settings. So if you reload the page the next time, it'll still know what preference you had. Also, the setting has been raised to also appear in that little device dropdown where you can also preview your post in a new tab. And there is a new post type support that we can add in code to actually change the default on a per post type basis. So a theme developer can say, hey, I actually want this to be the default for pages or for this custom post type. And then that is just the experience that the user gets from the first time they visit the page.
It's a real what you see is what you get moment, isn't it? It really is it encapsulating the entire look, feel of your site. Whereas the block editor in the past, I mean, I love it personally. I actually prefer to divorce the content from the template that surrounds it, you know, get that in shape, then click publish. But I realize that that's probably for clients kind of weird. You know, you've got this basically white interface and you click publish and then it becomes something entirely different. Over at 10op, do you use that, or are you intending to use that feature, like switch it on for content creators that you ship sites for, or will you stick with the, maybe it's a bit of both?
Yeah, so we had a very interesting journey that when we started rolling out just the block editor in Classic Theme, there was immediately demand, hey, I want to have that rich editing experience for the hero of the page. I want to be able to place something kind of below a call to action at the very bottom. I want to use this media and text block that I use here in content, also at the very bottom of the article below my author byline or below the comments. But that wasn't really possible because that was outside of the content area. And so something that we started doing at some point was in those classic themes, we actually set up the theme so that only the actual site header and the site footer are in the template, and everything in between that is just the content area, which means that now our article header is a block. The comment stuff or stuff below that, those are all just blocks or template parts that are used in the actual post content of every single page, which works great, but has that downside that it makes future redesigns and bigger changes to the structure of the site much harder because you're now putting design decisions into your content. And that kind of works if you're building custom dynamic blocks because that markup still is malleable. You can just update that. But if you use a cover block with a title block within it as your hero, that now is baked into all of your thousands of pages and you can't easily update that.
Yeah, and, that's right.
And this update, the ability to preview the template and make some of the bits and pieces in that template editable whilst keeping it in the template, is now bringing back that beautiful life of classic themes where the content is really just the actual literal content of the page, but all of those template pieces still are visually editable and you can have that nice experience of having a rich header that has editable pieces, having something at the very bottom of the page that is editable, but still retaining that differentiation of concerns between the template and the actual content.
I'm going off on a real tangent here, but then do you sync the bits and pieces? Let's say there's something above what we would traditionally call the content, so it's below the header, but it's before the content. Do you tend to sync those so that if an edit is made, it's site-wide, or do you really say, okay, this is what you've got on that page?
When that option is turned on to show the template, those pieces that are in the template, like that article header, they are not fully editable. You can't go all of a sudden go in and change the spacing, change the color, change those things, but we can make the title block, the featured image block.
Got it.
Those
Got it.
Pieces, if we add a piece of post meta, the content in them is editable. So it, you retain some of that flexibility of, hey, the content, even outside of the area, is still editable visually in the same way that you edit everything within the content, but it's not as if you just had a cover block in there with all the options. You can't go crazy with your design choices. If you want to do that, you can just go to the sidebar and say, create a new template, which will then create a new copy that only applies to this page, and then you can make all those updates there.
So kind of partially synced, essentially, yeah. That's fascinating. Honestly, there's a whole episode just there. But we got to move on.
I just want to bring it back to the beginning of the site editor, where site owners, that are bloggers or so, were totally confused between, because the new concept, the template concept was introduced new to WordPress for content creators. They didn't have access to that before. And that this distinction between template and content always confused people at the beginning of things. They were editing a template, but they were thinking they were editing just a page, and then was totally surprised that it kind of was propagated over that's the whole site. Yeah. So with that show content, show template, it kind of takes away that confusion. Yeah. So people can switch it on and be that way because it shows all the headers, all the footers, all the sidebars. And so it's not only for the agencies or for bespoke themes that it's kind of really good. It's also for the normal WordPress users, I call them, that are bloggers and use it out of the box and just want to change some of their things on their own website and get confused.
Yeah, there's a lot in this release which is fits that perfectly, you know, just helping, I'm going to use air quotes, ordinary people to publish more and more complicated things, so long as they can, you know, spend the time learning the interface. But we picked six. Go and check out that article. It's called Source of Truth, and then in brackets, WordPress 6.8. It's on gutenbergtimes.com. And there's way, way more that we did not cover, but that's kind of what we've got time. Birgit's raising a finger. Did we miss something?
I just wanted to... there's a bug that came out very, very late in the release cycle, that when you switch on the... What was it? If you switch off the show template, you are not able to see the Zoom view.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's kind of it is kind of connected, but in my brain it wasn't, and it took me a while to figure out why that wasn't working. And then somebody gave me the tip: you need to show the template, and then you can also do the Zoom view. So that might trip some people up, and that's the solution. Right now, it's a bug.
Do you know if that's going to be handled in 6.8.1, which by the time this episode comes out, will probably be...
No. Okay. There was actually a discussion about if it's really a bug. So, but kind of, yeah,
that's
from the developer
meta.
Point of view.
That's very,
kind of,
very
I don't like those discussions.
I like that. Yeah, is it really a bug or is it a feature?
Not a feature.
No, exactly. Kind of... okay, so honestly, we could have done a whole episode on just that, but we're going to move on, and we're going to talk about the release cycle of WordPress in the future, because you may have, if you're really into WordPress, you probably noticed that it clipped through, I don't know, three, four times a year. Let's call it something like that. You'd go from WordPress 6.3 to 6.4 to 6.5. And I don't want to get into all the reasons. Go elsewhere. You can find out all the reasons, but there are reasons. But it's been decided that WordPress 6.8 will be the big release. So we won't see a 6.9 during the year 2025. That if the way things are aligned at the moment, if that continues, 2026 we'll see 6.9, and maybe WordPress 7 will come 2027, something like that. However, there's been quite a flurry of people around on the internet writing posts where they kind of flip the argument, really. And rather than sort of spelling out, well, heck, that means things are slowing down, they're thinking, actually, there's an opportunity here. There's a moment where the slowing down, for want of a better word, but notice WordPress 6.8.1 is dropping. That didn't slow down. But there's opportunities here. Maybe the fact that WordPress 6.9 won't be coming in the very, very near future will give us an opportunity to finesse, for want of a better word, what we have already. And there's a couple of different pieces that I want to draw your attention to, thankfully put in the show notes by Fabian and by Birgit. One's by Jeff Paul, and it's called Minor But Mighty. I love that. Elevating WordPress One Minor Release at a Time. And then there's also another one by Aaron Jorbin called Defining Minor Releases for WordPress 6.8.x. And essentially, they both deal with the same subject, the subject that I've just described. But did the pair of you want to draw out what your conclusions were from that? You know, what are the benefits? There may be some cons, but there's definitely some pros to the way things are going. So over to you, either of you, whoever wants to speak first, really.
Fabian, you want to take that? Or? Okay. As a core contributor and being very involved in releases?
Sure, happy to. For me, I see kind of, I think before we even started recording, we briefly talked about that I agree with the fact that I almost felt like releases before this shift happened either too frequently or too seldomly, the Gutenberg plugin itself has a release cadence of every 2 weeks, which I think is great, because it's just, if there's something that is not great in this release, you'll know, hey, in 2 weeks there will be another one that there is a chance to get it fixed and to update something. And there just is a really continuous improvement, and we're slowly changing things. Whereas with the way that things happened over the last 2, 3, 4 years, it was every quarter of a year, every third of a year, you're kind of in this mode of, hey, there are all these changes that are happening now that maybe are a little bit disruptful sometimes, but then there's nothing really for a whole another third of a year or fourth of a year. And you kind of, if something is broken in this release, it's very hard to still, or it's, there's a long time frame to actually get something updated. And also still, somehow it feels like you're in maintenance mode of, hey, I need to just scramble to get that update and then test all the things so often. And most of the year is just taken up by that. And I feel like with only having one big release, that means that we have to do more minor releases. And that means that we have to change our definition of what a minor release is a little bit.
Right.
Because in the past, the threshold for actually getting a bug fix that was fixed in the Gutenberg plugin back into a WordPress minor release was so high that it barely ever happened. We almost never shipped small gradual improvement or fixes from the Gutenberg plugin into a WordPress minor release. Yeah, if it is a critical thing that is really breaking your site, we might do it, but we very seldomly did it. And this is something that already with this first release, we're starting to see the definition of what makes it into those minor releases changes a bit, and we're much more considerate of minor releases in the Gutenberg repository, where if there is a small quality of life fix for something that isn't necessarily a broken feature, but a broken user experience, or a user experience that could be refined a little bit, not by adding a ton of new code, but just making it a tiny bit better, those are things that we can consider for minor releases. And that is what kind of excites me about it, that the time it takes to get a small fix actually released to end users now doesn't have to be half a year or something. It can also be a much shorter time frame. I I know for myself, kind of what I've mainly focused on before this change was doing advocacy for big upcoming features to make sure that the agency perspective was considered as we're building those and providing feedback for the big features. And while that still is something that I keep an eye on for, because that next big release is out an entire year, my focus right now is much more on, hey, what are the small things that we can fix? What are the things that have been long running things that kind of never got the intention that they maybe should have gotten? Because those are the things that we can actually improve over the next year without having to wait an entire year to ship something. And so it definitely is a shift. It has its pros and cons, but I think there is a lot of opportunity in there still.
Yeah, I think the one of the things that I'm getting from it is that the importance of the minor releases will go up a bit. But also, I don't know about you, but have you ever got fatigue with, so not WordPress, like let's say that you've bought into a SaaS app and they are constantly changing it. You just get this new feature and this other new feature and you log in and it's like, what the heck? Where is it? Anything? And I think maybe we were in danger of doing that a little bit with WordPress. And so this sort of slowing down, yes, it does mean that when 7 comes around, it will probably be fairly profound. You know, there'll be a lot of education and no doubt a lot of YouTube videos and things like that to make sure that everybody's up to speed. But at least everybody for the next, let's say, 9 months, 12 months, whatever it ends up being, just get to use all the things that are there at the moment and really get familiar with them. And then, you know, there's a bit of a tsunami coming. We're going to flip over to 6.9, but we know that's coming. Got time to prepare for it. The developers can put the documentation together. The YouTubers can create the content showing end users how to do it. So that all to me, it certainly the sky is not falling in. That's where I'm coming from. Birgit, over to you.
Yeah, and I think that's right. I mean, Jeff Wall calls it clearing out the backlogs of the GoodTrust bugs, addressing paper cuts in the small UX annoyances. That's what Fabian was expressing, and also prioritizing accessibility improvements that can, so it's more, or it's inclusive to everyone and usable to everyone. It also has a great opportunity for people who just use WordPress, because as you say, they can now dive into the features that are already there. They're not having to catch up with all the new stuff. Now it's you can dive into can I do a pattern? Can I do, what is it that a pattern is constructed of? And to kind of dive into this feature that have been around for maybe 3 or 4 versions, you just couldn't dive in because there's all the new things that are coming out that you needed to handle too. So it's the moment to level up the skill sets pretty much with instead of dealing with the new updates, go deeper on the features. And that's particularly important for those who build sites for others to maybe build up a library of patterns and templates and starter content to have and have the assurance that it won't be obsolete in the next 3 months because WordPress comes out with a new version and does a few things slightly different, but you need to check it all. And this is definitely an opportunity to help with that. To also refine processes of migrating customers from the block-based to the block-based WordPress, from classic to, because it's now a little bit of it's a moment where you can say, okay, this doesn't change for the next few months or the next 9 months, and you can build on top of that. I can also see that plugin developers are going to be a little bit more risk takers, because a lot of plugin developers have kind of hold back because Gutenberg was changing so often, and they didn't have the time and the resources to dive in and say, okay, I need to build a plugin for that, but I'm shy away because every 2 weeks or every 3 months, I have to do the whole process again and look through my code base.
Yeah, that is...
That has not been... That's now the opportunity now to build what's missing in core and to get it to the customers and refine it with a WordPress that doesn't change for the next 8 months, 10 months, 12 months, as you said. So I see a lot of opportunities there that are not there before. And also the time shift. I did a lot of content creation, but now I'm looking, the source of truth is one thing, also writing about the new features in release post and all that. That takes a major effort. And if you do the in the whole contributors do that major effort only once a year, what else can we do? So there is a lot of I know that in 2019, quite a few training companies have stopped building new tutorials because they knew every time a new WordPress version comes out, they had to redo the whole thing.
Right.
It wasn't feasible anymore for them. But now is the time to actually create those tutorials and or do some deeper dives into the UI and how to do certain layouts, like what Jamie Marsland is doing on his video channel. So there are a lot of opportunities that I see out there coming from this. And it kind of reminds me a little bit back before the Gutenberg, there was a core standstill. Yeah, it was only incremental changes, even with major releases. But the power of WordPress came through plugins. And because of that standstill, those plugins really flourished. It was 2010, 2015, that kind of time. And I think that the next 2 years will have an influx of new features that come from third parties.
The truth is we are where we are. What we've got is what we've got. And so I guess it's the whole glass half full, half empty paradigm, isn't it? And, I think looking at it in that way is really positive. Fabian, I can sense that you've got more to say.
There's one other thing from the actual committer contributor perspective that I think something that we've spent so much time on and actually it kind of dead time that isn't really actively useful to the project is that whole backporting process from features that are developed in the Gutenberg plugin into WordPress core, because they're two entirely separate code bases and it's not fully automated of getting something from one place to another. So oftentimes it is a very manual process of, hey, I first develop it in this code base, and then if it actually should merge into WordPress core in a release, we now do this really big backport thing where we actually now take this code, move it over, adjust it. And that is just a very error prone and a very very human labor intensive process that takes a huge amount of resources every single release. And something that there is no official decision on this at this point, but something that there have been many, many conversations about even before this was, is there some way that we can integrate that development and actually combine that? Because Gutenberg kind of is the alpha channel of WordPress in a way.
Yeah.
What if we can actually make that happen to have, this is just a imagination, but could we have one singular repository that is both Gutenberg and WordPress core in one, where if you make an update, that just is the alpha version of WordPress. And maybe we have the Gutenberg plugin as the alpha channel that allows you to use that version or something. But those are all structural changes that require a bunch of work from the core committers, from the system admins, from all of those people that are usually so tied up into release work that all of this release stuff just constantly needs to happen. So there isn't really any time to put into all of the systems behind the scenes that are running the ship, how we're maintaining that, how we're building code. And I see a great potential of actually revisiting some of those things and using that time to maybe dive into those things to improve that experience, because there's so much time that we waste on those things that really we shouldn't have to, that I'm quite hopeful that there's, whether it's one repo, whether there's just more automated systems of talking between those two repos or whatever the solution might be, there are much smarter folks thinking about that than I am, but I am excited to maybe see some movement on that area, because there now is more time to actually work on stuff like that.
Yeah, the thing which comes into my mind is kind of being caught on a bit of a treadmill, and because that's the way we've done it, that's the way we'll always do it. And then we have this moment where, well, that's not the case now. And so you've sort of stepped off the treadmill and you now have a moment to, well, let's just look around the environment a little bit. Is there an opportunity here to tweak this thing or that thing? Or people have been complaining about this way of doing things for a little while. Okay, that's really interesting. So take a breath, everybody, and let's see. Let's see where the project goes. But certainly two worthwhile articles. If you head again into the show notes for this, Jeff Paul's article and Aaron Jorban's article, they will both be linked and you'll be able to draw your own conclusions from that. Now, the next thing in our show notes, I don't know if we want to cover, because it may be that this moment has been and gone by the time this podcast airs, but it was the fact that WordPress 6.8.1, the release candidate, is now available. Should we just pass that one by and crack on with the next one? Yeah, I'm getting a couple of nods. Okay. Anyway, if you're listening to this, hopefully by now you're on WordPress 6.8.1. You know, share your feedback. So the next one then, this is definitely going to be over to Fabian. TenOps. I'm going to try and say this, but for some reason I cannot get this word out of my mouth. Classify. It's so obvious. It's classify, right? But I just can't say it for some reason because of the way it's spelled. So it's CLASSIF and then AI capitalized. It's a 10 op thing. It's using Llama or OLAMA, and I don't know very much about AI, so you're going to have to just school me. What are you doing over there?
Yeah, for this one, actually, I'm interested to hear what Birgit has to say, because she was the one that actually added to the document, but I'll give everybody the brief intro. So Classify is a plugin that is an open source plugin available for anyone that has been developed by TenOp, and it is a plugin that has a bunch of various features that integrate AI into your WordPress workflow with giving you all of the power for choosing what models you want to use for various features, which features you want to use in the first place, and then also kind of granular control to change the prompts that are being used for all the various things. So I always think of all of these AI features in two buckets. There's content generation features, and there's kind of other features that are helping you organize your content and structure your content and that stuff. And okay. Classify kind of has a bit of both worlds. Yes, there are features that allow you to generate new content, generate alternate versions of titles, generate alt text for images as you upload them. Those kinds of things that are actually generating new content. But then there are also, those are the bits that I'm much more excited about, features that allow you to automatically tag your content, kind of based on just reading the content, based on knowing the tags and the site structure that you have, it automatically suggests additional tags and grouping, which kind of then make it easier to recommend content. There are kind of ways to leverage it to get content recommendations, things to get better 404 pages that drive up kind of user engagement, where you have a URL that doesn't actually exist, and just instead of just showing you an empty 404 page, oops, nothing found, can actually detect via the text that is in the URL what you were trying to get to, and then recommend you some other content and stuff like that.
Oh, that's neat.
Those are kind of, we're not generating content, but rather just augmenting, using the content that you already have to then make this whole system a little bit more smart. And that there are a bunch of different features that are all in that plugin. But the cool thing about it really is, for every single feature, you can pretty much choose which model do you want. Do you want to go with OpenAI? Do you want to go with something on Azure? Or, and I think this is the bit that Birgit was excited about here, there was a recent release we did that now allows you to use Facebook's open source OLAMA model that you can self-host and use that for your site. And so you can power those various features by that OLAMA model, which actually then doesn't mean you're sending it to an arbitrary cloud server somewhere, but you're in control, you're hosting that, and you are kind of only talking to your own server and to your own service.
That is interesting. Okay, Birgit, over to you. What was it?
I think that was the part, the I was experimenting with AI quite a bit And I realize that there are certain things that I expect LLMs to do, but it's the wrong application. And I needed to do I actually need something what's called an AI agent, you know, that does something for me. And I knew that that wasn't possible. And Ollama is the first thing was Ollama is the piece where you can download any LLM system to your local system or self-hosted. It says Ollama with a name from the Facebook LLM, but you can download Mistral or other things, ChatGPT or Claude, kind of some of that. But it's the part that really excited me was it's on the local system. You can actually then also use some agents that do things with your own data. And that's actually the next place. Yeah, if you have a big WooCommerce store, you can actually use that data with the LLM and feed it in there and let it analyze your own data without sending all the data to the source, any server, and expose all your e-commerce data to the world. Yeah, you can just do it on your own hosting. And that is actually the most important thing for me. If you want to use AI for business reasons, that you need to actually add it to your own data that has been around for 10 or 15 years. You have e-commerce data, and now you have tools in place that you can analyze it with and kind of look through it and then write silly little agents that do something with it, with your own data.
There is something viewed through a certain prism. There is something a bit Big Brother about a lot of these AIs. And I do sometimes question just how much data do they have? And how much are we willingly giving over? And will there be a moment where we suddenly think, oh, that was a mistake? They've got all the things now. And so that's neat. Yeah, so the Ollama model, you can self-host that. And obviously, if you're into the WordPress space, you probably have some alignment with self-hosting things, one would have thought. So, okay, that's really interesting. So again, links will be in the show notes all about 10Ops new project Classify. Say it, Nathan, it's not that difficult. Okay, so we've got two pieces to go. And the first one is a new product from, I'm going to say, Web Dev Studios. I think I'm right. And it is called Theme Switcher. And I think it's actually called Theme Pro. Switcher Pro. I don't know that the word Pro can be taken out of that. And this is a new product, I think. And it enables you to... Who would have thought that we wouldn't have this? It seems so obvious when you say it out loud. Two themes at the same time. Well, maybe more than two. I don't know. But at least two themes at the same time on the same website. I'll let that sink in. Because at the moment, you can't do that. You just can't. And so now you'll be able to sort of say, okay, this page, use that theme. This page, use that theme. These set of archives, we're going to use that theme, and so on and so forth. And it's just such a neat idea. So who put this one in?
I did, okay, as well, because I was kind of listening to Brad Williams, and I had on my show, Gutenberg Changelog, I had JC Palms, who from WebDev Studios, who created one of the starter block themes for the agency. And we kind of got talking, and I'm since the beginning of Gutenberg, I'm thinking about migration. Yeah, how can you move from a classic brain to a block theme or block-based theme brain? And you're not gonna do it in one swoosh. It's just too different of a paradigm. So if you can see one page at a time or one landing page at a time. So landing pages are probably the best way to do this, because normally you switch off the header, you switch off the footer, and just about that landing. And if you have a theme that allows that on your site, then you can kind of use all the patterns, you can style variations, all that comes with the theme for your landing page, and learn pretty much how to create content with that. And everything else on the site stays the same. Yeah. So, and you can also say, okay, the most important page is actually a single post page. So if that's coming from another theme, you can do a lot more than with the classic theme, because you can modify where the featured image is on the template. You can modify where the post meta is. You can remove the author right away without having a developer. So it's you can do it one task at a time and leave the rest be, and move there from, well, every other month you maybe have a new feature on your site. So I like that that is enabled through this plugin.
Yeah, at the moment, everything's kind of binary. So it's this theme or this theme. And okay, you could have a staging site, but it's still binary. You've still got to complete the work before you go from staging back to live. So let's say you're going from classic theme to block-based theme. I wonder, I have no idea about the data on this, but I wonder how many people have given up on FSE and block-based themes because they couldn't go the full marathon. You know, they maybe got halfway or they got a quarter of what they needed to do done, but it was just like, I'm done. I just haven't got the time to put into that. And that's sunk time. It's just lost time. Whereas with this approach, all of that time is just adding more bricks into the wall, because it's not like you've thrown anything away. All that time is useful because you can just say, okay, we'll switch those bits on. And then in next week, I'll do another little bit of the brick wall until I've finally finished it. So I think that's kind of an interesting... Although the plugin isn't marketed like that, it feels like it's marketed more as two themes.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it's this perfect migration opportunity, which maybe a lot of people have stepped away from because it just was, I don't know, too much work. Couldn't get it finished.
I will say I've always been impressed with the way that Core actually handles, just Core itself, the gradual adoption of block themes under the hood. I don't think it's actually utilized much out there. But technically speaking, if you've ever developed a WordPress theme, you're familiar with the theme hierarchy of, hey, we have that index.php template that then, if there is a single template, it uses that instead. If there is a single blah, 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 it uses that and so forth. That there's that whole big diagram that we've all looked at way too many times of all of the various template names. And what I found fascinating when block-based themes first were rolled out was, instead of just replacing that entire hierarchy with the new HTML-based templates, it actually layered that on top of those, so that instead of now looking for the single PHP and then index.php, it looks first, hey, is there a single HTML? If not, it looks, is there a single PHP?
Oh, so the framework was there.
It already kind of, WordPress Core out of the box allows you to only have your single leadership, if you have a custom post type, single leadership template as a block template, but the rest of your page still as PHP-based templates. So you were always able to mix and match the classic theme approach with the block theme approach in one theme. Where it gets difficult, though, is you now have your header and your footer that kind of need to exist in both worlds, which is kind of difficult. And also, a lot of times, sites just use the page or the post type for a bunch of things at once. That is where there just is one singular template, and that either is block-based or it is not block-based. That is where I think this plugin is filling in that gap, where you can now do this on a page-by-page basis rather than just on a whole post type basis, which for many sites still was too big of a jump. And also it was something that you really needed to be a developer for, to understand that whole template hierarchy and how to deal with all those things. And so definitely think this is a really cool way to kind of solve that problem.
I did not know that. So that's really interesting. I learned so much on these podcast episodes, but that one was great. So I didn't realize that infrastructure was there, that one, basically you could swap one out for the other, HTML versus PHP. Didn't realize that was how it was done. So,
even if you just have a default block theme, if you use any of the default themes or Ollie or any of those block-based themes, but then you have a custom post type or a custom template that you need to all of a sudden pull in some external data that is stored in Airtable or something that just is completely not block-based, I today would choose to just build a block that pulls in that data and use that in the block theme. But you could just go in and create that single PHP template file. And because of the template hierarchy, it would just use that if there isn't an HTML version of that template. And so you can very easily just use a PHP template as you always were able to do in the past in these block-based themes.
That's absolutely fascinating. That's really interesting. Gosh, that's brilliant. I'm going to be chatting to Brad in the next week or so. And then so if this portion of this podcast has intrigued you, keep an eye out for that episode. It'll drop in the weeks to come.
Yeah, I would think that plugin, it's a premium plugin, and it has a relatively high price tag for yearly subscription. So I think it's marketed to agencies that want to help bigger customers or clients' sites to actually move gradually over. I think it's not so much for people who want to have different season pages or something like that. So,
right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's an
interesting
point.
Because you can do this always with a style variation and you're done with it. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. That was interesting. So like I said, Brad will be joining us at some point in the near future. Keep an eye out for that. And the last one that we've got is the Release Create Block Theme Plugin 2.7.0. Not sure that there's too many minutes worth in here, but the Create Block, let me get this right. The Create Block Theme Plugin 2.7.0. It's obviously migrated over from 2.6 or X at some point. What's happened?
Well, it did a lot of code quality fixes and some polish on the sidebar buttons. But I think the major thing is that it now also escaped the image and the video block captions, the fig caption. So you can have any. There were some bugs in there, and when you export it, that it's now giving you the right text in there when you load it into a new site. So or when you load it, download it as a theme. So that I think that's the only thing. Create Block Theme is actually something for non-developers to create new themes or modify themes, because it copies everything that's in the database through custom styles from the site editor back into the theme files, be it the JSON file or template file or pattern file. So that's why I think the Create Block Theme is pretty much the major improvement for non-coders to create themes.
And I will even add to that, I wouldn't develop a custom block-based theme without the Create Block Theme plugin as a developer, because no one wants and can really hand author all of the block grammar in those HTML files of templates. Rather, what we're doing is we're building custom blocks, we're extending blocks, we're writing custom CSS, we're building that stuff in theme.json. But the actual creation of templates, that happens visually in the site editor, and then we use that tool to actually save those changes back to disk so that we can commit it to version control, that we can put it up to GitHub and use all of that stuff. But that plugin really is the crucial thing that made adopting block-based themes as developers even possible. So I would very much say, yes, it is super useful for users that don't consider themselves developers, but it's also an absolutely essential thing for developers.
Democratizing publishing. Here we go.
And design.
Yeah, that's and design. There you go. That's what it's all about. So we've reached the end of our list. I'm hoping, dear listener, there was an awful lot in there. We definitely covered an awful lot of ground. So at the moment this is released, it'll probably go out at the beginning of May 2025. Keep your ears, probably. It's a podcast. Keep your ears open, and hopefully in a few months' time, I will be joined by these fabulous people once more to sum up what's happened. It'll be a different landscape. We'll obviously not be, you know, moving into the sort of 6.9s and 7s and as we discussed, but let's see how WordPress develops over the next months. But all I can say is thank you so much, Fabian Kagi and Birgit Pauli-Hack. Really appreciate you joining me today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
Okay, I hope that you enjoyed that. That's all I've got for you this week. It would be very interesting to know what you thought about that. Birgit and Fabian, obviously bringing a wealth of expertise,
talking all about the bits and pieces that have happened in WordPress over the last 3 months or so. Hopefully, I will be joined by them for the fourth At The Core episode at some point in the future. But head to wpbuilds.com, search for episode number 421, and leave us a comment there. The WP Builds podcast is brought to you today by GoDaddy Pro. GoDaddy Pro, the home of managed WordPress hosting that includes free domain, SSL, and 24/7 support. Bundle that with the hub by GoDaddy Pro to unlock more free benefits to manage multiple sites in one place, invoice clients, and get 30% off new purchases. You can find out more at go.me/WPBuilds. Keeping the lights on is Bluehost. Bluehost, redefine your web hosting experience with Bluehost Cloud, managed WordPress hosting that comes with lightning-fast websites, 100% network uptime, and 24/7 priority support. With Bluehost Cloud, the possibilities are out of this world. Experience it today at bluehost.com/cloud. We're also supported this week by Omnisend. Omnisend, do you sell your stuff online? Then meet Omnisend. Yes, that Omnisend. The email and SMS tool that helps you make $73 for every dollar spent. The one that's so good, it's almost boring. Hate the excitement of roller coaster sales? Prefer a steady line going up? Try Omnisend today at omnisend.com. And sincere thanks go to GoDaddy Pro, Bluehost, and Omnisend for their support of the WP Builds podcast. Okay, just before I fade in the cheesy music, it only remains for me to say, remember, we've got the Page Builder Summit happening between the 12th and the 16th of May. Come and join us, pagebuildersummit.com. We would love for you to join, share your expertise, join the community, and find out what's going on. You never know, you might even be able to win some prizes in our bingo as well. Right then. Here comes some cheesy music to round out this episode. It really is dreadfully cheesy. I hope that you have a good week. Stay safe. Bye-bye for now.